We're going to get going, members. We don't quite have a quorum yet, but Ms. Blackburn, if you could come forward. Yesterday we ran a couple minutes over, so Ms. Blackburn, boy, tough morning. It was pretty foggy on the way in. Could finish her presentation, which she did, but I wanted to allow members a couple minutes if anybody had any questions. Ms. Blackburn, I don't see Representative Knuth here. I don't know, is your time allow for you to stick around for a few minutes? She specifically had questions. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. As long as we're waiting a little bit.
Representative Anderson, we were going to wait. We were going to keep going, but you asked a good question. I know you have one.
Thanks. Ma'am, we've talked a lot this session so far about the permitting process. Could you give us a real quick plan of action of how you would relate with the DNR and PCA in a permit application that would involve water or a wetland? How do you work with those other two agencies?
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, as far as the Wetland Conservation Act, that would be the only regulatory process that we would be involved with. And the regulation of that, the approval of that, all happens at the local level. So it would be through the jurisdiction of either the city, the county, whichever jurisdiction had, organization had jurisdiction over the wetlands in that area. So it would go through the local process, through the local county board, city council. We would only receive anything having to do with that permit if there was a dispute that needed to come to our board's dispute resolution committee, and that very, very seldom happens.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Other questions? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Blackburn, I know that you do some work with SSTS systems. Could you give us kind of a nutshell description of Bowser's role in SSTS, subsurface sewage treatment systems, Bowser's role, and then also kind of a little bit of a general picture of how many agencies and programs are kind of involved with SSTS? I know it's a huge question, but just give us a little nutshell picture.
We'll officially bring the meeting to order. Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, the subsurface sewage treatment system, SSTS program, the role of Bowser is working with counties and cities on implementing the regulatory program. The regulatory portion of that program is with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. They have the regulatory authority over it. Currently, the way that our agencies cooperate together is that Bowser packages the funds to counties to do both the implementation at the local level for the regulatory portion. We also package grant funds for them to do inventories, which is all voluntary. They apply for the funds. To do inventories, to do work on enhancing their capability to implement the program, where it might be taking paper records and making them digital, implementing a system for regular inspections on septic systems. And we also implement the imminent health threat system, which is whenever there's an imminent health threat system identified, counties can apply on a as-needed basis and receive funding for that. Those funds were expired very, very quickly because there's been a lot of activity going on in the SSTS program, and a lot of imminent health threat systems have been discovered, especially in the areas having to do with impaired and sensitive waters. So we package all that funding for the local implementation. That's the way it currently works.
Follow-up, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Blackburn, at what point do we make the division between individual septic systems and municipal septic systems? I know we have some small cities that are, some are sewered, some are unsewered, some have, you know, some lakes have people that get together and have a common system. How is that division made?
Mr. Chair and Representative
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, as far as the specificity of that division between septic systems and municipal, I would prefer that the Pollution Control Agency address that question. I'm not all that familiar with the details of that regulatory program rule that separates those two.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. One more question.
Representative Torkelson, follow up. The PCA will be here, actually not next week. Next week I think will be all DNR, but the PCA will be before us the week after that, so they'll be here to answer.
I look forward to it.
Representative Torkelson.
Just one more question. Rulemaking surrounding SSTS, is that all done in PCA, or does Bowser have any input into the rules?
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, Bowser has not had a role in those rules.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Would you be able to just stick around and, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question. I don't think it's appropriate for the witness, but for you. Could we, when PCA comes, have some charts on SSTSs and the ones that are imminent threat and show where we are and how we're doing? Could that be part of our testimony?
That's a good idea, Representative Wagenius. And members, any of the we have DNR agency next week and PCA ahead of time. They will be here multiple days, both of them. So as we go through the first day, if there's things or people not in the audience, and I guess this is for the DNR. I know the DNR is here, but I don't know MPCA. Because they're going to be multiple-day presentations, do not feel obligated to bring the entire agency in the audience of all the appropriate people. We will understand if the person for our question is not there the day we're there, that we'll be able to get it answered the next day. I know you got a lot of other things going on, and we sometimes give you a hard time for not being in the audience, but I'm going to be one that is going to be understanding of that. We are going to expect you to answer the questions and come here as appropriate, but I know you got a lot of this stuff going on. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment following up, Representative Wagenius, along with that information of how we're doing with septic systems, I'd also like the agency to bring in a description of the various programs that apply to SSTS, how they're funded, how they're applied for, and how the rules are put together.
Representative Torkelson, I see both of the able assistants on each side of me's fingers going wildly as you and Representative Wagenius are asking things, so I think they're doing their appropriate job to take care of that. Ms. Blackburn, if you could stick around until 8:30, I know Representative Knute had a question. We've sent a message to her to see if she'll be able to be here in time. At this point, thank you. Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we are compiling all of the information for our Clean Water Fund report, which is required by March 1st. And in that, we will identify all of the SSTS and imminent health threat programs, outcomes that we've been doing with that, and that might be helpful for your conversation as you move forward as well.
Thank you. And Ms. Blackburn, and for Director Jasky, I believe he was in the audience, I know that your boss has had different thoughts about some of the process than my boss, speaking specifically of the governor and Republican leadership in the legislature. But if an agreement is worked between them on some requests for some additional information we've had from you, we'd appreciate getting that, and then we're certainly going to make that available to all the members on both sides. It had to do with some additional information to help us develop our budgets, which surprisingly to most people, leadership and governor aren't 100% on the same path yet, but they're working towards that, we hope. So when we get a chance, we'll look forward to that information, and we appreciate your willingness to work with us when we're still trying to figure out who's on first. Thank you. If you could stick around in the audience, and if Representative Knute arrives shortly, we'll ask her question. But to begin with, let's Representative Jaskolski, we need to finish up. You've got, if you would come forward, and then Representative Cornish, if I believe I saw you in the audience, why don't you both be near the testifying file table as we have a number of folks. Mr. Solom, I believe you're on first. Mr. Brandt, I saw you this morning. You would be next. Folks, and Mr. Solom, I know you and Mr. Brandt know it, and for the rest of the folks, 2 minutes is the absolute maximum, and our ability, especially the chair's ability and effectiveness to listen, diminishes actually after the first minute. So I strongly recommend You've got important things to say, and we understand that, but everybody needs to know the longevity of your statement actually, I believe, diminishes in our ability to be effective listeners. Sorry to repeat that over and over, but and you were the first one, so you got to hear it. Mr. Solomon, if you could say who you represent and what brings you here today.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kent Sulem, General Counsel for the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I'll say trying to limit a lawyer to 2 minutes is an ultimate challenge, but I'll do my best. You've already heard a number of concerns that we would share regarding more and more lands coming off the tax rolls. Now, that's not because we are not in favor of good environmental protection. We're not. Certainly, my members, any of you who have townships in your districts, know if I said I was here against hunting lands, I wouldn't have my job very long. They're very active outdoorsmen. But we do have very serious concerns about continued acquisition of land by the state until there is good, workable, usable management plans and a guaranteed source of funding so that those plans are going to work. When problems go awry with public-owned lands, we're the first line of defense. We're the ones that are cleaning up the noxious weeds. We're the ones that are getting calls from the citizens. We're the ones who hear about why are our property taxes going up to provide the services, the roads, the fire, the police, et cetera, for those publicly owned lands, and we're not getting adequate PILT payments. You already heard the other day that at the township level, we're getting about 2.5% of the PILT payments. It's real easy to say that's the county's problem. It's not. It's the way the state statutes and state policies are set up and ensuring that there is adequate funding for PILT. So basically, our concerns are around the loss of the tax base, the loss of flexibility for land use for, when you have abutting publicly owned lands, the problems when the lands are not properly managed. It's a very complex issue, and I guess one thing, if we can't pass a no net gain, perhaps one option would be to look at some sort of short-term moratorium on land acquisitions while we have a work group put together to really study how do we fix the PILT payments, how do we fix the management plan needs, and how do we ensure they work.
Thank you. Questions? Appreciate it. Mr. Brandt. And next, Botzik, you'll be after Mr. Brandt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wayne Brandt, Executive Vice President, Minnesota Forest Industries, Minnesota Timber Producers Association. We certainly understand the direction of the bill and the concerns. We probably have a little different take on this than
Mr. Brandt. Excuse me. There's actually two bills we're discussing. If you could,
Representative, I'm speaking to Representative Druskowski's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt.
Specifically, yes. So our concern is that as aquatic management areas, SNAs, or other holdings are purchased, with this legislation, it would require the sale of additional lands. Our belief and concern is that the most likely sales would come from acquired forest lands. They're the most readily saleable, the most liquid, and the most marketable. When we look at the acquisition goals of the department, and you reviewed this at a previous hearing, we see 4,000 acres a year goal for aquatic management areas, a couple thousand acres a year goal for SNAs. One example that we would give you is if you run that out over a few years, say we had to sell 50,000 acres, if 50,000 acres in those categories were purchased. If those 50,000 acres happen to be acquired forest lands, which we think they probably would be, if you're managing those, if those are aspen lands on a 40-year rotation, you would be harvesting about 1,250 acres a year on that rotation. That's about 31,000 cords. On a better site, $25 a cord, that would be $781,250 a year in foregone stumpage revenue. Those stumpage revenues support about $32 million of economic activity. So that's our concern. We would make a couple of suggestions to mitigate those concerns. One would be to have sales within categories. If you buy forest land, sell forest land. If you buy aquatic management areas, sell aquatic management areas, and that would minimize that. The second would be to restrict any sales to non-productive, non-commercial forest land, things that don't support economic activities but have value for hunting and other recreational activities. You know, we would like to see a policy in the state of no net loss of commercial forest lands. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. No question. Mr. Botzik, I'm sorry, Representative Fabian. Mr. Brandt.
Mr. Bostic, is it your?
Mr. Brandt, sorry.
I'm sorry, Mr.
I'm
Brandt.
I'm talking too many names at one time. Representative Fabian.
We have all these bees here. Is it your thought that if someone private were to buy state forest land, that they would not do any kind of a management plan to harvest the wood that's there that's available to them as stumpage?
I own a small piece of property,
and we had some loggers come in and log off about 6 or 7 acres because it was time to do that.
Mr. Brandt. Representative Fabian, certainly the lands could still be available for harvesting. It would depend on the individual landowner objectives. And what we see over time is that most landowners will ultimately harvest, most private landowners will ultimately harvest their land. They have a different set of desires and management approaches than the DNR or others. They may harvest it because it's mature and it's time. They may harvest it because they're daughters in college and they need to pay the tuition. They may harvest it with a change of ownership where it is inherited from one generation to another. They may harvest it to enhance grouse or deer or other habitat. So, it's not a matter of the wood solely being unavailable, but it would eliminate that revenue flow to the state off of acquired lands and would shift that to the private sector, which is not a bad thing either.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Ms. Blackburn, if you could come back. Yesterday morning when we finished, Representative Knute had a question for Bowser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Blackburn. My question was kind of a general question about when you're thinking about doing conservation work on the land and long-term work. How much does climate change adaptation get taken into account when you're doing your conservation work?
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Knuth, we have botanists, plant specialists, hydrologists that are always looking at the changing of plant movement across the state, hydrology changes in the types of rain events that we're having, and we certainly try to address those. We work with the DNR, Department of Ag, lots of different groups on climate change type work groups that examine those. As far as our work on the competitive process, when we receive the projects, they are projects that are currently in local water management plans or TMDL implementation plans and are meant to address those issues that are there now. We do have some projects that we're bringing forward, for instance, through the Environmental Trust Fund, LCCMR recommendations about regeneration of certain types of species to make sure that they're viable in the future. So it isn't a consideration necessarily of the competitive process, but we definitely are aware of those issues that are facing the state and conservation and are working our best to make sure that we're well informed of those issues.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
A follow-up, Representative Knute. Are you done?
No, yes.
A follow-up to this point, Representative Wagenius?
Yes, thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Black, there was an article in the Star Tribune today about scientists determining that these massive rain events were associated with climate change. Is that something that your folks would be looking at?
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I know that for a number of years now, we've been working with the University of Minnesota Climate Center, specifically Mark Seeley, looking at rainfall intensity, duration of events, frequency of events. We definitely have been aware of those changes over time and trying to figure out, what's a trend and what kind of a trend does that mean. I think those are kinds of the kinds of things that we'll be looking at on the flood recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Mr. Bostic, we'll switch gears back here again. Don Ernosti after Mr. Bostic. Welcome, Mr. Bostic. 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Gary Bostic from Minnesota Conservation Federation. Minnesota Conservation Federation is made up of, membership consists of local and regional sportsmen's groups, and they work around the state. We've got sportsmen's groups that are members, and they work with kids to learn how to shoot a gun, shoot a rifle, shoot a shotgun predominantly, build birdhouses, plant trees, but they also work very strongly in acquisition of wildlife management areas. Wildlife management areas, and we, as you may know, there's over 1,440 of them in Minnesota. 1.3 million acres of habitat worked and managed, owned and managed as WMAs in Minnesota. WMAs are one element, and you heard Mr. Brandt refer to it, part of the Outdoor Recreation Act. Scientific and natural areas, aquatic management areas, state forests, state parks and trails are all part of the Outdoor Recreation Act along with WMAs. They're managed as a unit, as a system. It's been on the books since the mid-70s. Very integral, interrelated, interconnected part of land management in Minnesota. The system works, we think, in Minnesota. It's good for the rural economy. It drives money to the rural cities, particularly in hunting seasons. Just last Tuesday, I heard from, listened to Doug Peterson from the Farmers Union. I have a lot of respect for the gentleman, and we want to and need to and agree to work with the farming community to make the system work better. We need the farmers, we need the farm and ag community to clean up our waters in Minnesota. They need to be part of the solution as well, and we pledge to work with them. Ethanol is another issue, Mr. Chairman, as it relates to corn production. Do we produce it for food, or do we produce it for fuel? That argument and that controversy will continue to increase in Minnesota. We're looking for a model, Mr. Chairman, that might work for the purchasing of public lands. Don Arnosti, who's going to testify here in a couple minutes, and I both came up with this idea last week. There is the Wetlands Conservation Act that's on the books since the mid-1991, and there is a formula based on the amount or percentage of wetlands that you still have in your county. If you have 85% or more wetlands, native wetlands, you have a different threshold for additional wetlands. So we could look at that model, Mr. Chairman, possibly use it to get out of this scenario. We would not support the Drazkowski bill as written. We would support Cornish's bill as written, but we understand and we'll work with the authors to make find the middle ground if that is possible.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Botzik. Questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Botzik, do you have any numbers as to the number of hunters in Minnesota, both in-state and how many would come in from out-of-state?
Mr. Chairman, Botzik? Representative Anderson, not with me. DNR guys can rattle them off for you. But they are substantial, as you could well imagine. But they are very important, as I mentioned, to the entire state economy as we talk about jobs and tax base.
Thank you, Mr. Botzik. Representative Anderson, I know we have just short of 500,000 deer hunters, but we'll have the DNR, when they come down, they're going to be here today, and maybe when the lands people come, if one of the people in the audience knows the total number of both hunters and anglers, that would be good. Thank you, Mr. Botzik. Oh, Mr. Botzik, time out. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Botzik, looking at the Representative Drazkowski's bill, it appears to be broader than just lands administered by the DNR, that it leads to all public lands, whether they're at Minskew or Historical Society or maybe the Capitol Complex. I'd like your input on that question, because perhaps if these two bills are passed together and you pass a no net gain of public land and a no net loss of hunting land, then that would mean there would have to be a liquidation of non-hunting land. And would your organization be supportive of that?
Mr. Botzik.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, I don't think so. I do know when Representative Jim Knobloch passed the bill that we just amended or modified for DNR to liquidate, they had also called for the Department of all state agencies to liquidate land. I know the Department of Corrections, for instance, sold the work farm up by the St. Cloud Reformatory, and that was used as farmland. Guess what's on there now? Housing development. So that didn't go back to agriculture. MnDOT holds a lot of land. So I think you're right, Representative Hansen, what you're alluding to. There's a lot more landholders for the state than just DNR.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Botzik, so then you do not support liquidation of scientific and natural areas or state parks or trails?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Botzik.
I do not.
Well, that's good to hear, Mr. Botzik.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Arnosti. And next we'll have Lance Ness. Lance, you can follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Don Arnosti. I represent the members of the National Audubon Society here in Minnesota. There are 13,000. We have 14 local chapters, members in every one of your communities. I'm here to testify against House File 332 today. Page is passing out a sheet of our bird conservation priorities, and you'll notice the fifth bullet there points out the vital contribution that public lands make to Minnesota's outdoor lifestyle, including $4.3 billion worth of our economy and 55,000 jobs that are directly tied to the outdoor lands here in Minnesota. As Mr. Botzek alluded to, my thoughts were taken back 23 years ago when Representative Marcus Marsh from the St. Cloud area introduced a one-paragraph bill. It was about as long as this one, and it had to do with wetland conservation, a very, very complex issue. It was one paragraph long, and I like to paraphrase it as saying, if you see a wetland, don't touch it. Now, we entered into about a decade of very serious policy discussions. We passed numerous bills, conversations and revisions to that policy. Ultimately, we wound up with more than 100 pages of statute because Minnesota is a complex place. And I think the testimony we heard a couple of days ago alluding to the fact that some of the counties in northern Minnesota have in excess of 80% of their land base as publicly owned. And we also know that some of the counties in southern Minnesota have less than 1 or 2% as public ownership. It is very, very difficult to pass a bill this simple and make it fit right in Minnesota. So we believe this is, frankly, overly simplistic for an extremely complex issue. We oppose it, but would be happy and do point, as Mr. Botzek said, we do point to the wetland conservation laws, which were worked out with a decade of effort to figure out that there are different policies that do apply to different regions of the state, depending on the condition of land ownership. Thank you very much.
Mr. Anasty. Questions? Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to follow up on what we talked about yesterday in terms of where there could be loss of public land or where there could be gain of public land. And I wanted to ask Mr. Arnosti about, it appears there's a trend in some of the acquisitions to leave some holes in the state in terms of the greater metro area. And I think part of the conflict that's occurring is that where acquisitions are occurring are where maybe local people don't want them, and where people want them, there aren't acquisitions occurring. So I'd like your opinions on the need for, if there needs to be wildlife management areas in the seven county area, or even in areas, say, around St. Cloud or Duluth or Rochester, where there are population centers where there are people who might want to hunt but don't have the access, and they don't have the Escalade to drive up to Representative Fabian or Representative Hancock, Representative Dill's district.
Mr. Anasty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, we do support the acquisition of public lands in association with population centers as well as directed by conservation needs throughout the state. And we do think that there is an important debate going on and feel that, you know, maybe the balance isn't quite right, and we certainly would support additional acquisitions in the metropolitan area.
Thank you, Mr. Anott. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Anott, through all these discussions, to me it comes back to what percent of land should the government own? And Bowser's information presentation and the DNR, the closest I can get is they're aiming at better than 28%. And I was going to get your impression of what you think the appropriate percent of the land in the state of Minnesota should be owned by the government. And then I was going to mention that if you don't have an Escalade, soon they'll be able to ride the Northern Lights up to you know, the beautiful northern part of the state to look at this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Any comment, Mr. Anasty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make it very brief. I don't have a specific percentage target, but I do not consider that land owned by the government is owned by somebody else. To me, as a member of this state that really values and counts on public land for my access, I do not own private land in the outdoors. Those millions of acres are part mine, and so I consider public lands as a partial ownership by each of us. 6 million of us each have a share in those public lands. So I don't see that as an other or a taking. I see that actually as an enrichment of myself and all my community. But I don't have a specific percent target that I think is appropriate.
Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, in response to that comment, I love the idea of public lands and access, and I think it's important. However, I also understand that you need to budget, and what part of, you know, the budget for upkeep and et cetera, you know, is appropriate. So I need to have an idea of, you know, how much land we really should be owning. And that's the whole intent of my question is, when people come up and they've got these ideas, concerns, well, give us let us in on the vision that you have so we can better understand and put it into the budget situation that we're in.
Thank you. We're good, Mr. Okay, Anasti. Thank you. Mr. Ness. And after Mr. Ness is Tom Jess. Welcome again, Mr. Ness.
Mr. Chairman, 2 minutes. Members of the committee. Can I testify in both bills, Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely. They're both here for informational purposes, and we're trying to get a balance here.
Do I get 4 minutes?
That doesn't mean that we're not going to buy anymore. Mr. Ness, you're lucky you cut me off on a comment I shouldn't have made, so thank you. Mr. Ness.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
A minute and 40 seconds left.
I am Lance Ness. I am president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance and here to speak on both of the bills today. Mr. Chairman, I'll talk about 332 first, the no net loss bill of private land. For us, we respectfully oppose this bill. We feel the bill is somewhat duplicative of current law. There's current law already on the books that deals with this situation. So we think the bill is unnecessary, and we would ask for House Counsel's opinion. And maybe that's something you can do in the meantime as you lay this bill over and have House Counsel take a look at current law, Mr. Chairman. We would cite Law 97A.145, Section Subdivision 2, A through F. That allows counties the right to refuse sale, per Representative Anderson's point last week. There's also a portion of that law that allows for appeal. There's also a portion of that law that allows for dispute resolution. If these lands are in question, they can go to what's called the Land Exchange Board. That's the governor, the attorney general, and the state auditor. And they make a decision on the final say of whether lands can be exchanged or not. The Land Exchange Board was created in 1926, Mr. Chairman. There's nothing new here. So we oppose House File 332. Moving on to the next bill. Many of you were at the MOHA banquet just the other night. There's a little flyer that was handed out. And I'm just going to read a few portions of this, Mr. Chairman, in response to some of the questions. There are over 500,000 hunters. There are over 1 million fishermen. The DNR can probably give you exact numbers, but just give you an idea of the impact of hunting and fishing in Minnesota. It says 597,000 people hunt in Minnesota each year. Hunters pay $63.8 million in state taxes. We provide more jobs than Hormel Foods does. Annual spending by hunters is up to $4.82 million. There are 14,400 Minnesota jobs involved, $365 million in salaries and wages, $63.8 million in Minnesota sales and fuel and income taxes, and a $1.4 billion ripple effect through the economy. And one more piece of information. Marshall, Minnesota publishes maps that show they invite people to come to their area and hunt. So does Thief River Falls and other parts of the state. They want us to come there and spend our money. I've been in Slayton, Minnesota on opening of hunting season and pheasant season, Mr. Chairman. There is not a parking spot. There's not a hotel room. There's not a spot at the restaurant. That's the economic side of hunting and fishing. We support Representative Cornish's bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Ness. Question. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Ness, you heard my question to Mr. Arnasti, and we certainly want to have economic development in greater Minnesota, but there may be people who can't get to greater Minnesota. So I'd like your opinion on the acquisition or losing land in the metropolitan areas, not just the seven-county metropolitan.
Mr. Knapp.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen. I feel you guys, you folks at the legislature have conflicting legislation. On one hand, you say sell DNR land. As populations grow into the areas you're talking about, Representative Hansen, those areas that are close to populated areas become more and more endangered. Hunting gets closed. People build around them. All of a sudden, you can't hunt anymore. So it is more difficult for us to establish wildlife areas in population centers. I would agree with you, Representative Hansen. We do need to establish hunting areas closer to the population centers. But we have a difference of policy. Sell the lands, purchase lands. It's a conflict of issues. And it's here in the legislature, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Ness, I think Representative Hansen's alluding to the terrific potential. Again, I'll remind members, 18 minutes from the freeway, the Vermilion Highlands Wildlife Area potentially is got a great ability to grow with limited residents and living in the immediate vicinity. It's an unbelievable opportunity, and we hope it continues to be a priority of the state. Representative Torkelson, I'm sorry, were you good, Representative Hansen? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Ness, welcome to committee. You talk a lot about the impact of hunting and the hunting picture here in the state of Minnesota. And I do a fair amount of hunting, and I do it all on private land, virtually. Do you have any idea of what percentage of hunting is done on private land versus what percentage of hunting is done on public lands?
Mr. Ness, if you don't have that, that is a great question. And I don't know if somebody from the DNR is here that could possibly answer that. Or when the DNR is here, we can get Mr. Bogus or one of those folks to answer that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, I don't have that number, but I also hunt on private land. And we seek out, knock on doors, and ask farmers for permission. I turkey hunt down near La Crescent, Minnesota, a beautiful area, hunted there for 20-some years. Have great relations with landowners. I totally respect private property. There's an old saying, a farmer raises more wildlife by accident than the DNR does on purpose. So,
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Ness. It's not always by accident, I assure you. Many of my friends purposely set aside land for wildlife on their private farms. I think this is an important question. I think you would agree from your statements that it's not necessary to have land in public ownership in order for it to be accessible to hunters. I think we need to consider carefully the cost of owning land as opposed to the benefit and lower cost of utilizing private lands for hunting.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ness, short.
Representative Torkelson. It troubles me a little bit, and I'll go back a little bit. Matter of fact, I'm going to go way back to England in the days of the king's deer, where only the wealthy, the people that owned the land and had control, the nobles, could take the deer. The common person couldn't. That is the reason we have public lands. And representatives, I would urge you that that is an important part of our society, that the citizens need access to the wildlife and the game and the fish, and that is part of our tradition here. When we came to America, the game and the fish became belong to the people, not to the rich and the powerful.
Mr. Ness, I think you heard differently than what I heard from Representative Torkelson. I think Representative Torkelson was talking about the terrific opportunity that Representative Hackbart's been talking about for years in this state, the opportunity for things like a walk-in program that would keep private property and private ownership paying taxes but be available potentially to the general public to hunt. So we were hearing two different things. You heard England, I heard Hackbart. So. Representative Hackbart, any comment to that? You're good, or you comment? Good. Okay, thanks, Representative Hackbart. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ness here, I appreciate your position. And when you mentioned the law that's on the books, line 78.145, here's where I will disagree with you. I've been involved in House File 1, as you know, and in my attempt to get people to come and testify in favor of that from up in my district, many people were reluctant to do it. And here's the reason why, and this is the issue that I have with this particular law. If you don't play with the DNR the way they want it to, they have the ability to make your life miserable. And that's a sad comment coming from those people up there. And if the county were to reject a purchase of property by the DNR, I'm concerned about that. I applaud Commissioner Landwehr. I think he's done a great job so far of trying to break down some of those, I'll say, hostilities that have existed in the past. But that's one of the concerns that I have, is the fear of some type of payback, you might say. And I'm choosing my words very carefully because I do respect the work that the DNR does. But at the same time, we have to be cognizant of the fact that that has existed in the past. Thank you.
You don't even need a comment, Mr. Ness. Thank you. I mean, cut you off, but I saw you shaking your head no. Representative Quam, last question, and then Mr. Jess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Ness. What about a compromise of a hunting easement when public property is sold so that you get a merging of the two bills in that you sort of limit government land ownership, but you also have some heritage in allowing hunting? Do you think that's some sort of a compromise could be made that way?
Mr. Neff.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is some difficulty with that because there's a question of liability when someone owns the land, and if there was an accident or something on the land, someone were to get shot or hurt, the question is who's liable? Is it the government or is it the landowner? So I would have a little trouble with that.
Mr. Ness, I'll just, that's good, but I'll remind the members that actually, and the DNR can address this, but if you allow public hunting on your land, I believe, is somebody going to nod their head for me? You remove the liability with that if you don't get paid. If you allow paid hunting, it's a different situation. Mr. Ness, thank you. Mr. Jess, and then Mr. Raddus. Chris, are you here? Is next.
Mr. Chair,
you're offended by that? You certainly can. Because
I have some what you would call GIS overlays.
Well, whatever you can do in 2 minutes.
Computer.
Go ahead, Mr. Jess, and don't shut it. I'm mistaken. It'll mess it up. Ben, you better pick it up. I'm nervous with it being shut that far. Mr. Jess.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Jess. Don't be alarmed by this.
Mr. Jess, I'll remind you, 2 minutes, and I'm serious. Thank you.
Private citizen, and I'm against the limiting of the state to increase its ownership in land. There's several reasons. One, we have CRP acres, and my overlay doesn't access that, but I'm using data that I put together from a Bowser worksheet that was put together in August of 2009. Now, what I do have is there was a talk as far as state ownership. If we look at this, you have areas where there's 1% or less of wildlife management areas. And those are in orange. The blue areas are 2% or less wildlife management areas in that county. And then number three is 3% or less, and the white areas are greater than 3%. This is...
She must be able to see.
If we look at the cultivated acres in the state, you'll see that... wrong one. 80% or more of our land in cultivation are the areas in orange. 70% or less is in blue. And you'll notice that some of those acres run right along the Red River and along Minnesota. We also have a problem with the state has 1.2 million acres in wildlife management areas. The CRP program, there's a number of acres coming off of that, and it's been a boon for wildlife. The CRP acres outnumber wildlife management areas, 1.4 million acres. The question that I have after listening to the legislative auditor's report was several. We've got, and listening to it, it was more like a Six Sigma or an ISO 9000 presentation. There wasn't any regard for historical facts with regards to, at one time, the state of Minnesota was all public land.
Thank you, Mr. Jess. Any closing comments?
Yes. I would like to hope somebody would take the time to have the legislative auditor do a study of how much private land is too much. That's thinking outside the box, but how much of this land can, you know, we don't want to, and we had the Farm Bureau talking about competition. My brother runs several hundred acres of land. If I were to take the 306 acre chunk, he pays $7,000 in taxes on that chunk of land. You distribute it in Waseca County, where there's 266,000 acres.
Thank you, Mr. Jess. The taxes,
yeah. Pennies on the dollar.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jess, I think on both bills, they address in their own way a question relating to maintenance and operations. So Representative Drazkowski's bill is trying to say stop because we can't take care of what we have. Mm-hmm. And Representative Cornish's bill says keep, but doesn't address how to take care of what we keep. So how do we take care of what we have?
Mr. Jess, short answer.
Regardless of the amount.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Mr. Jess.
Representative Hansen, the DNR's budget has been cut by 67% over the last 15 years. If we were to restore those dollars, we'd see an increase. We've also lost 45,000 duck hunters in the amount of money that they're taking out state.
Thank you, Mr. Jess. Mr. Raddatz. Next, we have Dan Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau, and I'll try and be brief. I can be very brief. We support Representative Drazkowski's bill. And for reasons you've heard over the years, our members are concerned about liability issues, trespass issues, and loss of local revenues. You know, in a perfect world, if we had everybody as responsible as Mr. Ness that went out and talked to people, farmers, got their permission, worked with them, that would be fine. But I just want to relate one specific instance why our farmer members are concerned about it. My cousin is a dairy farmer in Winona County, and there's a public trail that goes behind his property. Well, again, it's kind of the best actor, but people go on the trail and then they throw pop cans into his hay field. He goes through, cuts the hay, runs it through the chopper. Most of the choppers have magnets to collect the steel because if it gets into a cow's stomach, it'll kill him. Well, it doesn't collect aluminum, and he has lost heifers that have bled to death because there was aluminum cans in the hay that got cut up in the chopper. So there's some real-life consequences that farmers see with people going along the edges of their property, and that's why we are concerned and we support Representative Drazkowski's bill. And the other thing I might add, too, is that we do think it makes a lot of sense to deal with these management issues. We'd like to see if there are state land purchases that there is. You look at the impact to local government or local revenues from government or for local government because we hear a lot about PILT. I think the auditor's report said in some areas PILT works and some it doesn't, so we need more information on
Thank
that.
You.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Raddatz, as an alternative to fee title acquisition, does the Farm Bureau support Reinvest in Minnesota programs such as WRP for conservation easements?
Yes, we've been strong supporters.
Thank you, Mr. Raddatz. You do support it. Thank you. Mr. Larson, and then last I've got Gary Leaf. Is there any people in the audience for or against either one of these two bills that didn't get recognized? Thank you. Mr. Leaf, you'll be the last one in this. And then, members, we will hear then from the DNR specifically about school trust land, and you'll hear a little different talk about the percentage of public land in a different part of the state. Mr. Larson, 2 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, members, Dan Larson today representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, 25 rural counties that work across the state on issues important to rural counties. Here is specifically on House File 332 today, and to support the goal, if not the letter, of House File 332, policy of the MRCC is that no net loss is in support of a no net loss of tax base and or acreage without approval of the county board.
Thank you. Any further comment?
Just to illustrate that, you had Commissioner Pavlik down on Monday, and I believe from Coochin County, and I believe the story that best illustrated this policy is, this is a decade ago, the best farmland in the state, here in the county, in Coochin County, was sold, or was purchased by the DNR without the county's knowledge. They were surprised to find out that the best farmland in the state had been sold to this state without the state coming and speaking to the county. So, pretty simple policy. Come and talk to the county if you intend to buy, purchase land within that county.
Mr. Larson, very legitimate concerns. Questions? Thank you. Mr. Leap. Mr. Leap, as you come up, I'll remind you 2 minutes and be sure to make your points short and sweet in case there's any questions. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Leap.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Leaf. I'm Executive Director of Sportsmen for Change. I'm going to speak about HF 498, no net loss of public hunting lands. No net loss of public hunting lands have been enacted in a variety of states to maintain public access, in particular hunter access. It's been implemented just last year and by Republican Governor Jim Riley of Alabama, signed it into law last year. In Missouri, Governor Haley Barbour signed it into law. Mike Huckabee signed it into law in Arkansas. Arkansas is a state that also has constitutional dedicated funding for the outdoors. It's also signed into law. The bill, I think the bill that we have before us is similar to the bill that was enacted in Florida and signed into law by Jeb Bush. All of these, there's a number of groups that support no net loss of public hunting lands that have been enacted in other states. The NRA supports no net loss. U.S. Sportsmen's Alliance supports no net loss of public hunting lands. U.S. Congressional Sportsmen's Caucus, that's a federal system or whatever made up of Congress and senators, support no net loss of public hunting lands. We also think that it's consistent with what the voters passed regarding the Legacy Amendment. We have in that bill, or what was passed in the Legacy Amendment, was around for about a decade, which is an acquisition and public access and takings clause, which is pretty strong language, to try to ensure that some level of money flowing out of the Legacy Fund did go to public lands that are open to hunters and for our wildlife management area system. And most areas of the state, or a lot of areas of the state, you're down to about a half a percent or 1%. So I would wrap up there and say that public access primarily means or public lands be public access.
Thank you, Mr. Leaf. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leaf, I'm wondering how you can testify here for Sportsmen for Change when you terminated your political fund called Sportsmen for Change last summer.
Yeah, we did.
Mr. Leaf.
We had two separate organizations.
Mr. Leaf, it just goes Chairman, Representative Hansen, just so you know.
Chairman, Representative Hansen. Yeah, we terminated the Political Action Committee and then have another separate organization.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
So, Mr. Leaf, that other organization, is that a lobbying organization? Are you a registered
grassroots
lobbyist?
Grassroots.
Mr. Leaf.
Grassroots advocacy.
Mr. Leaf, it goes Chairman, Representative
Hansen. Chairman, Representative Hansen, grassroots advocacy.
Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Leaf, how many members, dues-paying members, are there for Sportsmen for Change?
Mr. Leaf.
We go on a free subscriber basis. Excuse me, I went through the same cycle again. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen. We go on a free subscriber basis. I think we have 20 to 30,000 free subscribers.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Leaf, those are folks who filled out postcards at banquets. I was at a banquet where people fill out a postcard.
Yeah, some of it
on a raffle.
Hold on, Mr. Leaf.
On a raffle to get a gun. That's a lot different than an organization such as Pheasants Forever, where people pay dues, or Nature Conservancy, when people pay dues. So to say you speak for 20 or 30,000 people, I think is a misrepresentation.
Mr. Leaf, before you comment, you speak for a lot more than 20 or 30,000 people. There's over 500,000 hunters in the state of Minnesota, million fishermen that are very supportive of the fact that you are spending so much time advocating so they have a place to participate in the public. So I'm not going to question how many people you're here for. I know how many of my constituents are glad that you're willing to spend the time to come here and advocate for something that's their avocation, because they're out working in Red Wing boots today trying to make a living. So I don't know if you want to comment or not. If you do, it's going to be short and sweet.
Yeah, it is.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is a bill that's supported by the NRA, which does have a very large recognizable base, U.S. Sportsman's Alliance, Safari Club International, National Wild Turkey Federation. All those groups take positions on no net loss of public hunting lands across the United States. It's on the NRA's website as their national policy.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. The DNR's got to clarify a couple numbers or something. Somebody, Mr. Meyer, and then I do want to allow Representative Draskowski, Representative Cornish to both come down, wrap up their thoughts after hearing testifiers. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Just to answer your question about hunters and fishers in the state of Minnesota, we have over 2 million resident fishing people in the state. They create about 43,000 jobs and over $2.8 billion in retail sales annually. On the hunting side of it, we have over 600,000 people who buy resident hunting licenses that are linked to over 12,000 jobs and over $637 million in retail sales and spending annually. Just for the record, we do not support Representative Jakowski's bill. We do support Representative Cornish's bill, and we do feel that we can move forward buying land, precision conservation, as we call it, where we need to, not losing generational opportunities or conservation opportunities to keep up with the loss of CRP, and also work with the counties and all of our stakeholders to keep everybody happy. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, thank you very much.
Well, Mr. Meyer, if I could, you said you support precision buying of land. You've been on a snail's pace of selling land, specifically in northern Minnesota, where I think there's opportunities where it would make sense to sell land. Are you interested in entertaining the idea that this process needs to move a little bit quicker than a snail's pace?
Mr. Chairman, members, that's a great point. Right now we have over $8 million of land for sale at the DNR counter. You could walk into the office and buy $8 million worth of state land today. Our problem is we don't have buyers. We want to sell land. We want to sell land that's no longer working for its intended purposes. Divest of some of the non-productive lands or lands that can no longer be hunted or used for their intended purposes. That's our goal, and that's what we want to do. But as we all know, it's really not the market to be trying to sell land right now.
Mr. Meyer, I'm going to let Representative Dill ask one question, and then I'm going to get Draskowski and Cornish back up here, because I do want to get the DNR's presentation about the very important part of discussing the school trust land so that we can hear that. Because I framed that question wrong to you, Mr. Meyer, that is it wrong that the DNR is moving at a snail's pace? I believe the legislature, by their silence, has instructed you to move at a snail's pace. And I think we maybe need to clarify what our thoughts are, that the state of Minnesota is very different from southwestern Minnesota to northeastern Minnesota, and we have not given you a clear policy on what we should be doing here. Representative Deal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, yesterday I had the privilege of meeting with the Lake County Board, who has over 80% of their land in their county in public. And you talk about precision buying of land. And I think I know what you mean, but I also know that I thought we straightened out the fact that the counties would be enlightened on the fact that you're buying land in their county. And I sat at a meeting yesterday and saw that the county had no idea that there was going to be property purchased that was in a state park, and that they were completely blindsided by that. So this is a huge problem. I thought we had it straightened out. I thought we had an understanding, and we don't.
Mr. Meyer, comment?
Chair, Representative Dill, we too met with Lake County several times. I've been talking with them since that occurred later on, about December, I think it happened. That was a misunderstanding, a communication breakdown within the department, and we take full responsibility for that. We've also sold some land directly to the county to meet their needs as well. And we work with Lake County very closely, and mistakes do happen. I mean, that's all I can say, but we do take that situation very seriously. I told the commissioners yesterday when we met with them that that will not happen again. But we need to improve our communication at all levels on land sales and land acquisition.
Representative, follow up, Representative Dill, you're good. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. I thought the testimony of Mr. Larson of the rural counties was interesting, and I think we have a bit of some confusion here about what county boards can actually do. And yes, they can turn down acquisitions, but then they're appealed down to the Land Exchange Board, and the general feeling is they're going to get overturned and approved down here at the Land Exchange Board. So in the spirit of compromise, I would suggest possibly that we would allow county boards to make the final decision with no appeal down here to the Land Exchange Board and let this decision be made locally and let the county board, in fact, have the last word on land acquisitions.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. I'm sorry, Representative Anderson. Representative Hansen, Mr. Meyer, this may be a question. It is. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr.
I wasn't able to cut him off. There, keep going. Representative Hansen.
Commissioner Meyer, maybe this is question for the chair. I noticed in one of the bills it has reporting requirements, and I'm just checking to see if there's been a fiscal note requested for both bills or either bill, or is the department preparing one? Because I would see that there'd be some costs.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Both these bills are here for informational purposes, and I think folks probably know my feelings. I'm only an author on one of the bills, but the bills are only here for informational purposes. Representative Drazkowski, Representative Cornish, if you could come down. But folks, I'd like to make mention that in the audience today, and you've all gotten an email from me, that after this meeting ends at 10 o'clock, the I can't believe it, Adam. NCEL has a meeting in room 400, and we are honored today, folks, to have the former chair of this committee and my predecessor and Representative Wagenius's predecessor, Representative Osmond, in the audience to be in room 400 north, I believe, from 10 to noon to talk about the importance. It's a national... I've just drawn a blank on it. Representative Osmond, if you could tell me what the organization's name, NCEL, right? Did I get the initials right anyway?
National Caucus of Environmental Legislators.
Well, I know it was the legislators that are interested in the environment. If we could give Representative Osmond a hand, that would be great. You want to flip a coin? We'll go by age. I don't know which one. Drazkowski, Representative Drazkowski, if you could wrap up for a couple of minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. I'd like to extend a thank you to the people who have come to testify on both sides of each of these bills, but certainly those that came to testify on behalf of my bill. First of all, I guess I'd just like to respond a little bit to what Mr. Meyer said about the idea that there are no buyers for land. I think that is false. Matter of fact, I authored a bill a couple of years ago to sell 5,000 acres of DNR land that is currently being exercised in the form of leases to farmers throughout Minnesota, and we are members in the leasing business where we lease state-owned land to farmers. And in the discussions around that bill, our office called many of the landowners, especially in northern Minnesota, that were adjacent to those lands. They were very interested in buying those particular parcels of land. Of course, the DNR did oppose that particular bill as well. I would also acknowledge that, at least in my part of the state, that hunting wooded land is a premium right now, $4,000 an acre, some of it taking... I can't believe that there is not a market for a variety of different lands. Members, we heard from the Office of Legislative Auditor and heard very clearly that we do have more land and have plans to buy more land than we can afford to manage properly. And I think that's something certainly that our eyes have been open to and that we can take a look at as we move forward. The DNR also testified on behalf of their report that says that it's going to take somewhere between $200 and $900 million annually to properly manage the land that that we either have or are planning to buy. I think each of these bills, members, probably needs further discussion. I'd like to thank the chair for laying them over because I think this has opened the discussion up so we can move forward and maybe come up with some solutions here. There are still questions around how we handle the proceeds from some of these land sales. I know not only does the DNR manage some of our state land, but the MnDOT does as well. Also, MnSCU and Historical Society manage portions of our land. And I know I've talked to MnDOT. They're concerned about their ability to and their relationship with some of the federal mandates that it requires some of the proceeds to still be managed by them for future land purchases for right-of-ways. So That's about all I have, members. I really believe that this is, at least my bill, can be analogous to a governor on a car. If you don't have the right type of governing mechanism on a car, the car continues to accelerate out of control, and eventually smoke comes out of the tailpipe and the car blows, or the engine blows. We need to bring some governing mechanism to what we are doing with land ownership in Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski, just a clarification. You are referring to a thing that people that are older like you, I, and Cornish, worked on a carburetor to slow it from going too fast, not a person sitting on top of a car. Representative Dill, do you have a question for Representative Drazkowski?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Drazkowski, I'm reading the bill, and as you see, I'm an author of the bill, and I'm very conflicted on this whole issue because of, the counties in the north are, as you well know, and everyone knows here, are just massively dominated by state and federal ownership, tribal ownership, county ownership, tax and corporate ownership. When I read the bill and I read the actual language of the bill, if we were to build a, if the Iron Ridge Resources, which is a state agency, were to build a golf course, which we have two of at this time, would that mean under this bill that we would have to sell land because we took that land into state ownership? Let me give you another example. There is a motorplex that's being proposed, of which the state purchased about 800 acres of land to facilitate that economic development. Would we then have to sell 800 acres of land somewhere else in the state? Let me give you one more example. For economic development purpose, mainly minerals, we are looking at purchasing 3,455 acres of land right now on the Iron Range that has a massive, the world's largest, as far as I know, deposit of precious metals under it. Would that mean that we'd have to sell 3,455 acres or an equal comparable value of land somewhere else in the state, maybe within our own county or maybe in Worthington or in some other southern county down Representative Gunther's or your district or somewhere? So that's a problem I see when you tie in what we do in the north for economic development versus the language of the bill.
Representative Drazkowski, I think that was a question specifically about your
thank
bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dill. As the bill, Representative Dill, is written now, I believe the answer is yes. We certainly need to take a look at that. There's also the question, the intersection between the acreage of land and the value of it, because, you know, if you buy an acre of land that's $5,000 and you sell an acre of swampland, that doesn't quite wash. So, I mean, there's two different approaches to it, and certainly I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Cornish, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to start out mine with a short story. I think about 3 years ago, in Lake Crystal Welcome Memorial School District, they have a fundraiser. It's a booster club for sports. And you take things in to auction off, and all the money goes to the booster club. I decided to put one morning's hunt with me and a duck blind and one of our saloons on our farm up for auction. And five families started bidding on it, and it ended up at $257. And a father came out and hunted my place. He says, the reason I bid that is we have no place to hunt. That's what I want to keep in the back of your minds. Five families dropped out because they didn't have the money to take their kid hunting and pay. And I felt guilty even putting up for auction, causing somebody to spend money, but the money didn't go to me. It went to the booster club. But it just indicates that there's no place to hunt. Representative Torkelson brought up a good statement about the private land, and it's available for hunting. However, in all three of my counties, I used to farm and I still own a farm. Basically, the private lands are hunted by private people. Very few of them advertise in the paper, come out and hunt my farmland, including me, because I have a large family. But it produces a lot of wildlife that come off the boundaries into the wildlife. So we thank the farmers, and this surely isn't an anti-farmer agricultural bill. Another thing I want you to realize is this is not a mandate to buy land. This is a no net loss of hunting land. It's a common sense bill that talks about mapping or giving the DNR direction to categorize an inventory, and then if something is sold off, to replace it. It's not an out-and-out mandate to buy land. It's just this is a fail-safe. Just to keep what we have, and folks, we need places to hunt. And I'm sensitive to my friends, Representative Dill, In Rukavina, up where the land is owned mostly by the government, and that's why this bill addresses, we got to sort that out. And we also, it's a work in progress. Some of the dates for reporting are wrong, or they're usually reports to the legislature we make. And we have to find something to do in the payment in lieu of tax and somehow to satisfy the counties and the townships. So this is just a common sense, no net loss. It gives people a place to hunt. It's a misnomer that all this land in southern Minnesota is open to hunting. If you go by the wildlife management areas that we do have in the opening of seasons, you'll see families pulling up and taking off because the parking lot is already full, one after the other. So we can't lose any more hunting land, and that's my testimony. Thank you.
Representative Cornish, I think Representative Torkelson has a question. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cornish, just a nuts and bolts question. Is this intended to be to set the bar when the bill passes, and that's we would never go below that level, or is this bar, say we gain hunting land in a year's time, is the bar meant to reset higher as we go through time, or don't you know?
Representative Cornish.
Well, that's a good question. This bill basically is a no net loss. It doesn't talk about gaining. I suppose if we do gain like the DNR had planned, at some point as that level moves up, yeah, we wouldn't want to lose out. And I refer back to the Hunting and Fishing Amendment and how it passed, the language in our bills that talks about access. Access is also a part, and that's why the ownership is so important. But it could be a moving target, admittedly. If it says no net loss, that doesn't mean that today's acre, we never get higher. I mean, but it doesn't address that.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr.
I'm sorry, Representative Torkelson, were you done?
No.
Yeah, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish. So this, in effect, is a maintenance of effort bill.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Quam, Cornish.
All this is on its face, it's a no net loss. Whatever words or adjectives we use to describe it, it's a no net loss. We don't want to lose any more hunting.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cornish, if we do the no net loss, what are your thoughts on trying to maintain the property we have? How do we deal with restoration, enhancement, and maintenance?
Representative Cornish, do you care to comment?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative, we sure as heck don't do it by getting rid of land. That's a terrible solution. Okay, we can't take care of the land that we have. Let's sell it off until we meet the number of employees we have, and that's a moving target, too. We figure out what we're doing wrong and fix it and get the people out there to get the thistles off or mow by the right-of-ways or wherever we own the land. We just don't jettison and sell land because we're bad managers. We fix the management problem.
Thank you. Representative Leguinius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cornish, I am trying to read the passage of your bill and Representative Drazkowski's bill together. We passed them both. And so I'm looking for the consequences of that. So would the consequence then be that as we acquire more WMAs, we need to sell off parks or SNAs where people don't hunt, or WMAs? I see that as the consequence. Do you see that as the consequence?
Either one of you, Representative Cornish, Representative Drazkowski, need or want to comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, no, I don't see that as a consequence. I mean, I suppose it could be a fear or something, but I don't see the basis for balancing it by selling off SNAs. This is just a no-net loss of hunting land. How it's accomplished, I suppose, could be everybody's guess.
Representative Cornish, if I could clarify, Representative Wagenius' question worked with the assumption that potentially both of your bills could pass.
Yeah.
Maybe I could clarify to members of the audience and to everyone here. Representative Drazkowski and Representative Cornish both bring up terrific points. And I commend you both for working on this issue and raising the awareness. It just so happens all three of us love to hunt, so it's interesting. And Representative Drazkowski thinks the glass is half full. Representative Cornish thinks the glass is half empty. I might have that backwards, but either way, I think they know the current situation. The bottom line is the glass of water is different in different parts of the state. And we're trying to address that. And I commend you both. The bills are a work in progress, and we need to have this discussion. We're going to continue to have the discussion. The next thing is going to be the DNR talking about specifically school trust lands. And if you could come down, we have Mr. Vadas is going to be here today. Mr. Vadas is leaving, as folks know, I believe, on March 15th. So we need to get his talent as much as possible. Representative Dietrich, and I know Representative Rukavina was in the audience. The reality, I don't know that we're going to get to any of Representative Dietrich's bill today. We may do a little bit, depending on how Mr. Vadas does. But Representative Dietrich has worked very hard on the school trust land, and it's my hope that she'll be part of the school trust advisory. There's a group with a name, something like that, that we're hoping she'll be a part of. And be able to work on this issue. Welcome, Mr. Vadas. And, geez, I see, do you got the lawyer with you today? What's the deal here? If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Marty Vadas. I'm the director of the Lands and Minerals Division from DNR. And, yes, indeed, we have the lawyer here today. I have Daniel Rourke, who's an attorney with Lands and Minerals that's going to help me answer questions today. And I will go through this quickly, Mr. Chair, but just a little background on the school trust lands, what they are, how they came into state ownership, what is a trust, what they're intended to do, some recent legislation, and also talk a bit about the revenue that's been generated in recent years from school trust lands. We'll do that then. So this map then shows the current school trust lands from various federal grants. And I'll explain a bit here. There were three separate federal grants of land that were intended for the use of schools. There also were other kinds of federal grants, for example, to the University of Minnesota. But today we'll focus on the school trust fund lands. And so, as you can see, these are principally located in northern Minnesota and especially northeastern Minnesota. School lands, school trust lands came to Minnesota via a land grant from the federal government. The long-term practice in England was followed here in the U.S. where tracts of land were set aside to support schools. And so when Minnesota was created as a state, there were acres that were given from the federal government to the land, and that generally was section 16 and 36 of every township. But often that land was already gone, it was already sold, or it was part of an Indian reservation. And so if that was the case, then additional lands, alternative lands called indemnity lands, were selected. And in total, this grant was 2.9 million acres. In 1860, there was another grant. It was called the Swamp Lands Grant, where 4.7 million acres of land came to Minnesota. And the purpose of this grant was for construction of levees and drains. So there are lots of wetlands in northern Minnesota. The intention of this grant was to enable Minnesota to sell this land and drain it for agricultural purposes. Of the 4.7 million acres that were granted, about 3 million acres were given away by the state. About 2.8 million acres went to eight railroads, for example. And also there were grants for improvements, things such as state prisons, the Stevens Seminary, and also something called the Cannon River Manufacturing Association received land from this swamp grant for their purposes. Another type of land grant in 1866 was a 500,000 acres called internal improvement land. And this really was from a law that passed in 1841 that granted new states land to develop their infrastructure. Of this, about 99% of these lands were sold, and the total revenue was about $3 million. Most of the money went to pay off the state railroad bonds issued to help finance the early railroad construction in Minnesota. So this is then the summary of the three land grants the state received. The original acres is about 8.1 million acres, and today, or in 2009, that then is about 2.5 million acres of land that still remains in state ownership. And there's an additional about 1 million acres of severed mineral rights that are owned by the state. And Minnesota is more like western states that still have school trust fund land. Most all of the states east of us have sold the land, and many of the states then sold the land and spent the revenue, so they have nothing left. So each state received this land grant. There are, I believe, 23 states that still have school trust fund land, and Minnesota is one of them. The distribution of school trust lands by county around the state, as you can see, there are some counties, Kuching, 34% of Kuching County is school trust fund land. And those counties that are listed here represent 90-plus percent of the location of that land. There is some school trust land in southern Minnesota, for example, but very little.
Mr. Bates, Representative Wagenius has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bates, we get these acreages in these categories, and I cannot in... What we really need to know is the value in dollar, not the mass of land. So do you have a figure of how much school trust, how much swamp land, just a rough aggregate estimate of the value of the land if we were to sell it all today?
Mr. Bates.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius. Really, the only way to arrive at today's value would really be to do an appraisal on each parcel, and that would be extremely expensive. But maybe a way to think about it is if we have 2.5 million acres of surface, and say, for example, that might be worth $1,000 an acre on average. Some would be more, some would be less. I think if I have the arithmetic right, that would represent something like $2.5 billion worth of value. With that kind of a rough calculation. But that doesn't count, for example, the potential income from the mineral rights. And as we'll see a bit later on, a substantial amount of the income from school trust land has been from mineral rights. So there would be an additional potential value to the state for the mineral rights. So I understand your question, but it's not a simple, straightforward calculation to value that land asset.
Representative Wagenius.
One of the reasons I bring this up is for perspective in Minneapolis, because we talk about land off the tax rolls, and that's the big deal. In Minneapolis, we have a value of $10.8 billion of land off the tax rolls. And you would ask me, well, where in the world could that be? And I mean, one big obvious one would be the University of Minnesota land. So we just have to keep these things in perspective, because it just seems like all the problem is up north. It is not.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Mr. Vadas, I'm going to have you go through the rest of your presentation, and then we'll hold the rest of the questions when you're done. Mr. Vadas.
I'll move quickly, Mr. Chairman.
You're doing good.
The next slide then shows how DNR has put this trust land into management units. And so you can see, for example, 67% of the land is classified by DNR as state forests and campgrounds. And there are, just to note, 51,000 acres of trust land that are in a scientific and natural area. It's the peatland scientific and natural area that was designated by the legislature in 1991. Just a couple of slides on the state as a trustee and just the definition of what that means. We talk about this school trust land, and so it's really then by law definition, a right of property, real or personal, held by one party for the benefit of another. And often people think of these parties as who the trustee is. So, for example, the governor, the legislature, and the commissioner of natural resources has been designated by the legislature to manage this land. And also the State Board of Investment has a role here because, as we'll see a bit later, that's the group that invests the proceeds from the school trust fund land. So, in short, DNR is charged with generating the income. And then that goes to the State Board of Investment that is charged with getting a return on that investment. There is legislative oversight on DNR. There's something called the Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee, and that was established to review the management of school trust land by the DNR, and they're supposed to then recommend policy or statutory changes that they view should be made to benefit the school trust fund. Their recent legislation concerning school trust fund is that now DNR is to report twice a year on how the land is managed, how DNR is reducing management expenditures, talk about sales and exchanges and commercial leasing, and what we're doing to maximize the long-term economic return to the trust. Also in 2008, the Permanent School Trust and Fund Advisory Committee was expanded in membership. Here you can see the current members of that group. So Mr. Chair from this committee is also on this Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee. Also, some private individuals were added that are supposed to be appointed by the Commissioner of DNR, and they're people with expertise in things like minerals and real estate development and so forth. Also, there's some 2010 legislation that required two reports from DNR, information on evaluating the effectiveness of DNR in managing school trust fund lands, and that report was delivered. Also, legislation required another report looking at the advantages and disadvantages of funding mechanisms for compensating the permanent school fund for private and public use of school lands. We did that and submitted that report about 2 weeks ago. There were some 2010 legislative proposals, and I know you have some bills before you to be heard today, but one was to create an independent agency to oversee the school trust land management. And another one, that bill did not pass. It was introduced and had some hearings. Another that considered having a legislative coordinating commission monitor the DNR and the activities on school trust lands. A bit about revenue. This is the statutory direction that's given on how what the goal of the permanent school fund is, and it is to maximize the long-term return from these lands, consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities of this trust relationship. It also goes on to say, then, with sound natural resource conservation and management principles, and with specific policies provided in state law. So that's the goal that's been given for the land, and especially the DNR, for how these lands are to be managed. Here's a look at what the gross and net revenue has been for fiscal 02 to 10 from these lands. And on this chart, then, what we're showing is really two things. One is the mineral leasing, and these are the main sources of income for the school trust. And that's in red. So for each fiscal year, you have a bar that represents the gross receipts and then one that's the net receipts. And on yellow here, then, are bars that show the gross and net for forest and the real estate leasing. And you'll notice in 2006 for the red bars that there is a change. Before that, all of this activity was funded from the general fund, and there was a change in 2006 where management costs were taken out of some of the proceeds. And so we can move on, I guess, to revenue goes to the corpus. And so mineral leases less the portion deposited into this mineral management account that was created in 2006 go to the corpus. Revenue from land sales, from forest campground fees, and net revenue from a forestry suspense account. So that's the main sources of revenue. This is just a slide that talks about a little more detail about the mineral receipts by fund. DNR manages all state mineral rights. And on this slide, then, that sort of bluish color, if it's showing up that way at the bottom, is the school trust fund revenue. And also listed here, then, is the university trust fund and tax forfeit revenue. And at the bottom, that line represents the mineral management cost. And just to mention the projections that we have for the next 4 years is that we're likely to see substantial mineral revenue from all of the mineral development, especially taconite, that we're seeing in northern Minnesota, to the point where we believe it's likely that there'll be on the order of $100 million of income to the school trust fund in the next 4 years from mineral revenue. Mineral management account, I'm not sure I'll do, unless there's questions, too much detail on this. The short version is that the cost to generate the mineral revenue is now being paid out of the portion of the proceeds. This just gives a snapshot of what that means for different fiscal years. In fiscal 6, that was 20%. In fiscal 8, that was 8.4%, as you can see on this chart. Next, then, is land sales. And DNR has, for many years, had a modest program to sell trust fund lands if they can't generate revenue or they're isolated, landlocked, individual parcels that you can't get into generate any revenue. So we've had this long-term program to offer parcels, and you can see the record here. In fiscal 10, we offered 28 parcels, and we sold 11. This is all at public auction. And a couple of other notes at the bottom there. There have been a few lakeshore lease lots that have been sold in the past, and I have a couple of slides on a proposal that we're working on for additional sales. I wanted to mention, this is one we're working on. We have not put these lands up for sale, but there is a lake called St. Mary's Lake, and it's a 26-acre parcel near the city of Eveleth. And the next slide shows you that's the parcel sort of in that crosshatched area. That's the Eveleth Municipal Airport that you see on this slide. And we sort of went down this road where Eveleth asked the state to purchase some of that trust fund land for a runway clear zone. And we can't sell trust land directly, so we leased it to the airport, and that suited their needs. But took a look at this remaining parcel, and as you can see, there's a line running through there. Turns out there's city sewer and water and electricity that runs through this parcel, and it just seemed like an ideal spot to perhaps look at some sort of residential development in this area. We did spend a small amount of money to hire a contractor to look at different ways this land might be developed and then give us some idea of what that might be worth. And this is just an example of eight lakeshore lots with no back lots. This one has eight lakeshore lots with four platted back lots. This one is sort of a conservation easement where there'd be a buffer zone on the lake, there'd be common docks and sort of clustering of the development. And so then in this scenario that we asked for, we got this information last week. This just shows the income that the school trust might realize, the net revenue from looking at these different sort of scenarios. And it appears as though the one where there's the eight sort of standard lakeshore lots is likely to be the one that would generate the most income for the school trust. Forest management, I know Dave Epperle is here. If you have questions on this, I'm sure he'd be happy to answer them. The forest revenue is derived from mainly from stumpage sales. But the Minnesota Constitution does provide that the net revenues from state forests will go into the fund. And just the slide here that forestry put together to give you kind of a sense of how much school trust fund land is sort of in play for logging at any one time. Of the 2+ million acres of trust fund land, about 1.5 million acres is really capable of producing commercial timber. 29,000 acres are reserved from harvest, and that's what you've heard of as old growth. And so then about 18,000 acres are harvested every year. So that's in various stages. So about 1% is being harvested for forest purposes on a yearly basis. The distribution from the permanent school trust fund The principle is perpetual and inviolate, so once money goes in there, it stays. The Board of Investment, as I mentioned, manages the investment of that fund, and the interest and dividends are distributed throughout the state of Minnesota to each school district. And that was another statutory change that was made a couple of years ago in the past. This distribution was an offset to the general fund, but that changed in 2010 and later, where it's now an additional payment to schools for this purpose. And there's something just under, about $650 million in that fund now, and the distribution in 2010 was $23 million to school districts. And finally, Mr. Chair, a couple thoughts on land exchanges. There is a statute, 92.121, that directs the Commissioner of DNR to exchange permanent school trust fund land if that land is in a management unit that can't generate revenue. So, for example, if it's in a state park or old growth or SNA, the statutory direction is to fix that by doing an exchange if there isn't something other way to compensate the trust fund, such as perhaps a lease. And so this is what we've done lately on that direction. We completed exchanges of all school trust lands out of state parks if that land can't generate revenue. We are focusing on old growth and WMAs, and just late last year, the Land Exchange Board did approve two land exchanges, one for old growth and one for WMAs, and we're continuing to work on that. And we're also working with this Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee on identifying lands outside of the boundary waters that could be used to exchange for the trust fund that's in the boundary waters. There's 86,000 acres of school trust land in the boundary waters, and we're working on getting partly exchanged out and partly a payment from the federal government. And last year, the legislature passed this resolution encouraging this exchange. And finally, this is a picture of a result of this land exchange. This is now some formerly school trust fund land that's now part of Itasca State Park. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm through and be happy to answer any questions. Well,
thank you, Mr. Vadas. And we do have a couple of questions. I want to make a comment, and thank you for being willing to spend a fair amount of time with myself as I get better able to understand this issue. folks, I want to bring you to the bottom of sheet three on ours. It was, Mr. Vadas, if you can bring it up, goal of the permanent trust fund. I will say, Representative Dietrich, I think this is where we need to weigh in. Folks often talk about the goal of the permanent trust fund is to secure the maximum long-term economic return from the school trust fund lands. And that's where most people end the conversation. The reality, it says, with sound natural resource conservation and management principles. Well, members, it's the DNR managing this land. We put that language in there. It's going to make Cornish and I very happy. We're going to just hunt it and hunt it and hunt it, and that's what it's for, because that's what it says. It doesn't say to take eight lots and St. Mary's Lake and put $1 million in the trust fund for the kids. It says keep it open for hunting, I would say. And so I think, Mr. Vadas, you brought that out to me a few days ago, and that point, and I think that's the discussion the legislature needs to have, because the reality, I don't think that's right. Cornish and I like to hunt, but I don't know that however many millions of acres up there should all be managed that way. I think you've laid out one perfect opportunity. I think we need to look at it differently and get some instructions from the legislature. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just lead into the setup for my question. I wanted to know three things. One is how much of this land is huntable, how much is actually hunted, and for the land that is actually hunted, where people are using it now, why isn't the Game and Fish Fund putting money into the school trust fund as rent.
Mr. Vadas?
Mr. Chair, I represent Wagenius. All of the land is open to hunting. It's considered public land and open for that purpose. How much exactly is hunted, I don't have a clue. I assume it's like all land, if it's accessible, it's likely to be hunted at some time during the year, but there is landlocked situations that would only allow adjacent landowners to hunt it, for example. And as far as the Game and Fish Fund making a payment for the use of that, that actually is one thing that we did address in that recent report that we submitted just a couple of weeks ago. And listed that as an option, as really a number of options. One that they do in Montana is a surcharge on hunting licenses that goes to the school trust fund for the use of the land. Some states, their natural resource agency does pay a lease fee for the use of that land. Currently in Minnesota, there are Western states that consider school trust fund land as non-public. So it's not open for public access, for example.
Representative Wagenius.
I think just that it seems from this language and that the land is being used, or at least part of it's being used for hunting, that the Game and Fish Fund should have been paying all along. I don't think it's necessary to say that we raise additional money. It just should have been happening all along. And that would then satisfy both the duty to maximize, or at least partially maximize revenue, while meeting our conservation values. So I think that is something that we have to question deeply. Why
hasn't
rent been paid?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, Mr. Vadas, in case you're not with us again, I want to thank you for your long years of service to the people of Minnesota. I think you're a very good employee for the people. Does the general fund pay PILT on school trust lands? Is there a PILT compensation that goes to school trust lands?
Mr. Vadas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, the answer is yes. It's it started out at 50 cents an acre. That's escalated, and I believe now it's like 60, 75 cents per acre.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vadas, do we know the aggregate amount then of total PILT that's paid for school trust lands?
Mr. Vadas, why don't you get us that information? Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then secondly, on values, so if there's a school trust property that is, say, landlocked, it's one of those checkerboard pieces, whether it's in the BWCA or somewhere else, how do you use like sales for appraisals? I mean, how do you get a like sale, or how do you appraise the value on one of those, quote, unproductive or landlocked pieces of property?
Mr. Vadas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, we do that through an appraisal, and it would be comparable sales, and so that landlocked nature would be taken into account in the valuation.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Vadas, for being here. One thing that I had a question on when you showed us the slide of the airport runway. You said that the land can't be sold directly, so you had to lease it. You know, this is new to, you know, like this is my first time on this committee. Could you clarify why we can't sell land directly? I don't understand that.
Mr. Vadas.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are certain kinds of land where the legislature can authorize a direct sale. And trust fund land is different in that, based on the land grant nature and some language in the Constitution, this land can only be sold at public sale. So that's the direction that we have, and that's how we conduct it. So that's why we can't sell it directly to the airport authority or anyone else. It can, Mr. Chair, there is a provision where land could be condemned, but it would go through a condemnation process then. Say, for example, if it was interest for a highway purpose or something like that, but we can't transfer or sell the land to MnDOT, for example, unless there is that condemnation.
And Mr. Vadas, you made a point there that I want to make sure people understood, that some of this is actually in the Constitution, that statutorily we're not able to change some of this That's the reality. It's part of the Constitution. Mr. Vadas, I have three questions. I'm going to try and get through them if we can. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. A quick question on the distribution of funds to the to our schools in the state. You mentioned $23 million. Is that sent out on a strictly a per-pupil basis, or is there some weighted formula that we have winners and losers?
Mr. Chair, perhaps Representative Dietrich might answer that better, but it's my understanding that it's on a per-pupil basis. It's
Representative Dietrich is nodding yes. Representative Anderson, follow-up? We're good. Representative Qualm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vegas, I'm concerned with the chart of, you know, the red and yellow chart of overall gross net revenue of where between fiscal year 05 and 07, it appears as if suddenly all of the forestry and lease proceeds are mainly being eaten up by management costs, and I looked at it as being a bad precedent. And then also, I'd like a slip of paper signed by the commissioner of the DNR saying that I can hunt any of the public lands like you had mentioned. Thank you.
I think it was mostly a comment. But you did, you were wondering the management fees. Was there a question there, Representative Qualm?
Yes. You know, why in the latter half of those years all of a sudden the forestry and lease was eaten up, you know, all the proceeds eaten up by management. I think management went down, or there's some other reason.
Mr. Vadas, do you have a short answer? Otherwise, I think you're going to have to get back to us with that in writing, if you would, how that, maybe what is included in the management fee. That's been a big sticking point, as you're aware, and brought up a number of times. So if you could get back to that with that in writing. Representative Drazkowski, did you have a short question?
Short question.
We have a couple of housekeeping things. Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Vadas, I've seen signs around the state and heard others, too, that it says state land keep off. You know, the precept of land, of public land ownership, is that people are going to allow access to it. Can you tell us when that occurs and why, and or do we just forget to take the signs down?
Mr. Vadas, does that happen on school trust land that you're aware of?
Mr. Chair, not to my knowledge. The only time I can think of where that would happen on school trust is if, say, it's on a mining lease and it's part of an open pit mining operation and you need to protect the public from the hazard of the mine pit. I mean, there may be a fence around that.
Thank you, Mr. Vadas. Representative Drazkowski, you raised a good question that we'll have the DNR get back to us on where state land is closed and why sometimes those signs are up. Members, two things. We need someone to approve the minutes. Representative Torkelson, discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The other thing, members, up in room 400 north, I believe, the National Caucus of Environmental Legislators. I got it right this time because I wrote it down. Any of you that aren't members, please consider joining. Representative Dietrich, we will hear your bill on Tuesday. We will have you come back if you're available. We'll delay the DNR's presentation and allow you about a half hour to have an informational hearing on those bills. Members, this is really important stuff. We have to deal with this school trust land and the great value and whether it's being managed properly or not. Apologize for running over. Meeting adjourned.